And now, it's time for the biggest bonanza on Blaze Radio. Live from the Bill Austin Radio Studio, this is the College Basketball Bonanza.
Good Sunday evening, everybody. Welcome into the College Basketball Bonanza. My name is Nicholas Hodo. Happy to have you along. Sunday Canelli not with me tonight, but we're still going to have an unbelievably jam-packed show because it is March. It is certainly that time of year where things can get very chaotic, and they have in an absolute hurry this week, and probably about the greatest way you could possibly imagine it over the course of this March. And of course, the first Sunday of March means the first auto bids have already been handed out. And last night it was the OVC. The NEC actually handed out its auto bid last night as well as Saturday night after some Mary Mac action into the final, still in their final gear of the transitional period. So for now, it is Fairleigh Dickinson into the NCAA tournament from the Northeast Conference. Talked a little bit about that I did last night on our nightly recaps over on your preferred podcast platforms. And of course, today, the Sunday show, just another extended version of that. And what we got today was some absolute bangers of games. I mean, oh my gosh, it was just unreal to watch. And it's really, for me, the biggest story came out of the ACC Conference. Kennesaw State. From national doormat to the NCAA tournament in just 4 years. Really, really good ASUN championship game. Kennesaw State winning it over Liberty 67-66. Really, this is an incredible game. Absolutely incredible game. The KSU Convocation Center was absolutely on fire. Just an incredible atmosphere there. And they absolutely deserve it for Kennesaw State. I mean, under Coach Amir Abdul-Rahim, this program has gone from a literal doormat, from a one-win team in his first year to the NCAA tournament. Truly an unbelievable turnaround for Kennesaw State. And it doesn't get much better than that in college athletics for turnarounds. I mean, that is unbelievable for Kennesaw State. On the Liberty side, though, a lot of concerns. Not for Kyle Rowe, though. He was fantastic. 23 points, 4 boards. Really efficient from the field, inside and outside the arc. The 6'7 senior was fantastic. Darius Mickey had 14 points. 0 of 11 from 3. 0 of 11. That's a problem. And Darius McGee, it's not like this is his first time going cold, okay? This is not his first time going cold. But you look at what he had done, particularly in the ACC tournament up to that point. 29 points against each of Bellarmine and Eastern Kentucky. Yeah, kind of ended the regular season on a dud against Queens. But 2 nights before the regular season dud against Queens, he had 35 points. 27 the game before that against Jacksonville State. 43 at Kennesaw State, February 16. So, it's not like he came into the ASUN Championship on some bad form. I mean, yeah, he had a few off shooting nights, but it's not like he came in with terrible form. He puts up an 0-for from deep. And that is, quite frankly, stunning from Darius McGee. That's stunning. If he had an even halfway competent performance from deep, Liberty wins this game no problem. And I mean absolutely no problem. But not meant to be for the Liberty Flames. And it's a shame, really, because I think this Liberty Flames team will find a way into the NIT. And their non-conference, really their only major win of note is against Bradley. Lost at home to a Southern Miss team who will be in the NIT by just 4 points. Put up a really good fight against them. Neutral court against Northwestern wasn't all that good of a performance. Alabama on the road. Second game, they got dominated. That's really about the only thing they have. And a road loss against Oral Roberts, that was pretty convincing. So, don't know if that's great of a non-conference resume, but I think Liberty will find a way into the NIT. They are not the auto bid. Let's make that perfectly clear. Kennesaw State, if they had lost today, would have been the auto bid from the Sun Belt into the NIT. That's gone for the Sun Belt. That's out the door. So, you got to rely on Liberty getting in on an at-large basis. I think they should. I still think Liberty's a really good team. They're still top 50 in KenPom, by the way. That should show you something. If they're not in the NIT at the very least, I will actually be disgusted, honestly. I think Liberty deserves the opportunity to at least get some postseason basketball on that kind of a stage. What seed they'll be, I couldn't tell you. Couldn't tell you how far down Liberty is within that sort of list. But I think Liberty deserves another shot at some basketball. Whether it is the NIT, if they happen to miss out, because, again, this is the NIT bubble we're talking about here, and it's rapidly shrinking all the time. So, in a realistic basis, you're talking about anywhere between 18 and 26 at-large bids available to the NIT. So, that's something you really got to keep in mind, that the NIT bubble can shrink fast, it cannot shrink as fast. So, it's something to keep in mind for the Liberty Flames, but hats off to Kennesaw State. What a turnaround for that program. Truly remarkable. And then we transition over into the Missouri Valley. If you thought Darius McGee had an off night, whew, Bradley, what happened? 26-point convincing win for Drake in St. Louis, in which it wasn't close. I mean, Drake took off early first half, never looked back. And it just continued to get worse and worse and worse over time. So, absolutely unreal job from Drake. Tucker DeFreeze had 22. Darnell Brody, a senior, had 12. Garrick Sturts had 12. Pardon if I butchered that. He had some good bench performances in there. Senior Sardar Calhoun had 8. Roman Penn only had 9, but he's still a good player. Had 6 assists and only a couple of turnovers on the night. On the day, I should say. Absolutely unreal performance. And a building that was about 80% Bradley fans. Really remarkable what Drake pulled off in St. Louis. I mean, you just don't know what to say about Bradley. I mean, was it their fault? Did they catch Drake on a really hot night? Because then they kind of did. I mean, Drake shot 8 of 14 from 3. Over 50% from inside the arc as well. You put it all together, it's 26 of 50 from the field for Drake. So, Drake was definitely on one. They are on a hot one, okay? But if you're Bradley, that's a really awful performance. They will get another shot. They are the auto bid from the MVC and the NIT, so they will get another chance at some quality basketball. Not the basketball they're looking to have in mid-March, but they'll get another opportunity at this. But you really have to look at this and be like, wow, that was awful. That was not good from Bradley. I mean, this is a humiliation where you had most of the fans cheering you on in the building, and it was a very humiliating performance. It was not good. So that's something that Bradley's going to have to really fix. And if the motivation is still there, I still think Bradley can be a decent team in the NIT. Maybe win a game. Or possibly two if they're really on one. So, I mean, Bradley's still a quality team in my estimation. But it's just so hard to fathom what I consider a relative no-show on such a big stage, in my opinion. That was not a good performance at all. You look at the Big South Conference as well. UNC Asheville coming back from the relative dead, down about 14 points. They put together a 12-2 run and another 13-2 run to steal it from Campbell in a 77-73 game in the Big South Championship. First off, for Campbell, hats off to Jay Powell. 26 points, 10 boards. That's the best game of his career, and that's such a shame to see someone like him kind of end it all after giving that kind of fantastic performance and just not getting what he deserved. I mean, that's a shame. An incredible Big South turbo for him. He really showed up when the lights were on for Campbell. For UNC Asheville, this team may only be a 16 seed. They may only be a 15 seed. They're not going to do much, in my opinion. But Drew Pember and Tyhong Jones are dangerous players. You have to keep them in mind. Pember had 29 Sunday, 10 of 12 from the free throw line, 8 boards. Really good performance from him. And Tyon Jones, who has been at UNC Asheville now for 5 years, had 24 points himself and a really solid shooting night. Then you look at Drew Pember in particular. This guy's going to cause some problems. 20-plus points in 5 of the last 6, by the way. And then you look deeper at this, by the way. In the Big South Tournament, 29 points, 31 points, 29 points. That's ridiculous. That is ridiculous. And this guy is capable of more. Back on January 25th against Presbyterian, the guy had 48 points. 48 points. Truly unbelievable. He's going to get his first legitimate shot at the NCAA tournament. And I think he's going to play well. I think he will absolutely play well. Drew Pember, really good stuff from him. And this game, throughout the entire Big South tournament, was the guy for UNC Asheville. And really, for the way this game went, I mean, UNC Asheville, for the whole season of work, they deserved to get the auto bid here. Campbell, I mean, I have to give so much props to the Camels. They fought. Man, you just look at it. 4 games, 5 days. They played exceptionally well. All of them. Presbyterian game in a neutral court, figured he'd win that. They go out and beat Longwood pretty convincingly. I mean, 81-68, I mean, 14-0 run, mid-second half of that game. They just go on, and that's it. That's it. So that was a huge pro power. Jay Powell had 23 points in that particular game. An absolute survivor of a game against Radford. I mean, really solid stuff from Campbell here. I mean, game was going back and forth in the late minutes, but Campbell found a way. They just found a way to get to the final. And that's sometimes all you have to do in March. It's all you have to do sometimes. So I give Campbell a lot of credit. They had a fantastic Big South tournament, and they had come in quite flanking on good form. I mean, you look at the last 5 games before the Big South tournament, it was a double overtime loss at Gardner-Webb, convincing wins over Charleston Southern and Presbyterian at home, overtime loss at Winthrop, and a really close road loss at Radford. I mean, it's not like they were getting crushed by anybody in the weeks leading up to the Big South tournament. They go into the Big South tournament, they play well. So, a lot of credit to Campbell. Not the end of the run they were looking for, but certainly an opportunity that Campbell, I'm sure, will appreciate there to play in that kind of a moment. So, what does this now mean for those guys? The auto bids. For UNC Asheville, like I've said, they're like a 15-16 line. Okay defense. But it's not near the one that's needed for March Heroics, in my opinion. I think that defense probably needs to be a little bit better to really cause that. But UNC Asheville, solid year. They'll get an opportunity. I don't know how close they'll be against a 1 or a 2. But within how wide open this year is, you got a guy like Drew Pember. If he goes off, man, you can make him competitive. Man, you can, man. That's just kind of the way March works. And Tyon Jones, if he's on as well, you got two guys complimenting each other, and they're both making down shots. And you get a defense on the other side that's not paying attention. That'll be interesting. For Southeast Missouri State, who won the OVC, crazy OVC title game, crazy. And Fairleigh Dickinson, they are both first 4 teams, in my estimation. They could face each other, honestly. They could face each other. They're both analytically 9 in the KenPom top 50. Fairleigh Dickinson's even worse out of the top 300, as is every team in the NEC. They could very well face off against each other in Dayton. But I think they're both first 4 teams that if they face a 1 seed, they will get crushed. Both of them. Kennesaw State is a more intriguing team to me. They will be so happy to be there. They will be so happy to be there. And you know, you get into an attitude of, are they just simply happy to be there? Or are they in an opportunity where they can find something? Because they're not horrible. They are trending as a 14 or 15 seed right now. I don't know if they have enough to get an upset over a 2 or a 3. I don't. You kind of have to look at it from just where Kennesaw State is right now as a team analytically. Okay offense, okay defense. They can shoot really well. Their free throw, excuse me, their free throw shooting is not that good. 66%. But they come in really good form, having won the ACC tournament, having won 8 of its last 9. They were 10-6 after January 5, losing a close road game to North Florida. They're 26-8. They are playing unbelievable basketball at this point. Unbelievable basketball. And the two losses they had to that are both really close. Home against Queens, at Eastern Kentucky. So Kennesaw State, I mean, they're playing really well as a team. You know, the opportunities they got against tournament teams in the non-conference didn't go too well. 14-point loss at IU. Crushed at San Diego State. 10-point loss at Florida. Close one at VCU, but they're not really a tournament at-large team here that we're talking about. So, it's a veteran core. Senior Terrell Burden. Devin Robinson. They are there. They are pretty solid. So, it's certainly an opportunity for Kennesaw State. And I wouldn't necessarily count them too out. Again, there are no big brackets, no matchups yet. So, literally, for me, when it comes down to upsets, I look at matchups in the first round. And I look at the confidence I have in that higher seed, and they can go far. So, it's a Kennesaw State team that I'm just like, okay, they have the veteran core. You know that they had a decent shooting team. How will the defense hold up? And that's a question I'm not quite sure in how that's going to end up. We'll have to see what ends up happening there. Just to touch up on some other conference tournament action from today. So again, it wasn't just those three conference tournament finals. There was action going on everywhere within the sport today. First off, in the regular season, unreal day. Houston buzzer beater against Memphis. And in a case for some people were arguing that it could have been a push-off on Jamal Shedd. Penn State's buzzer beater. Maryland on that last play. No, this is not how you blame an entire game. But you look at that game in particular. You had about three guys all going for the rebound. The Penn State shooter follows his own ball. All three of those guys go for the ball. And an offensive rebound from Penn State slips into the picture, gets the board after the ricochet, puts it up and in. If you're Maryland in that situation, you really need to make sure that every single possible rebound is boxed out. I mean, it didn't account for him. Kind of slipped in there. So, it's a huge win for Penn State. If the Big Ten's going to absurdly get 10 teams in the tournament, that was a big one. That was huge. So, that was big. Indiana's win in overtime against Michigan really puts pressure on the Wolverines. They probably need to win 2 in the Big Ten tournament, maybe 3. We'll see where that ends up going. But back to the conference tournament actions. I know that's what you're all here for. My thoughts on all of that. And there was a lot of it. The Patriot League. The semifinals there. Oh boy. Did this get crazy in a hurry. Obviously Colgate getting the job done. To no one's surprise. Lafayette in double overtime. Over American. This was a 6-7 battle, by the way. 6-7 seats here. So, in the Patriot League final, you will see Lafayette, and you will see Colgate at a 5:30 p.m. Arizona tip from the CBS Sports Network. If this ain't a blowout, I don't know what Colgate's doing. For an 11-22 Lafayette team to make it into the dance, into the final game in the Patriot League tournament, that's off to Lafayette. Yeah, they got benefited by being a 6-7 semi. But unreal job. Congrats to them. It's a good experience for Lafayette. If they win against Colgate on the road, I will actually, maybe not literally, but I will die laughing. Not literally, of course, but I'll just be in utter shock. Utter shock. That's going to be a Colgate proving ground, in my opinion. The Southern Conference. Chaos continues. Furman in overtime against Western Carolina. Chattanooga, the 7th seed, over the 6th seed, Wofford, by 12. Setting up Chattanooga and Furman again tomorrow night And I gotta tell you something, this will not be a gimme for Furman. Chattanooga has Jake Stevens back, and my goodness, he's still good, folks. He's still good. Against Wofford in that second semifinal in Asheville, North Carolina, Jake Stevens puts up 25-7 with 4 steals and 2 blocks. Efficient day from the field. 8 of 11 from the line. His guards, really good complimentary performance. Johnson with 12, Collar with 10, White with 13. If that is the situation for Chattanooga against Furman, ladies and gentlemen, they will have a shot at pulling off the upset. They will have a shot. Simply unreal what Chattanooga's done with Jake Stevens back in the fold. Really, really good performance. And they get another shot at Furman. And I think we all remember what happened last year, the Chattanooga buzzer beater against Furman and Asheville to win the Southern Conference Championship. One of the more unreal moments of last bracket season. Truly incredible moment. Could it happen again? We'll have to see. I think Chattanooga, the underdog, has a real shot at it, but we'll have to see. In the Sun Belt, a lot of chaos going on in the Sun Belt. The Southern Miss, Marshall, both of those were the 1 and the 3. They were gone. And in the first semifinal, the 8-seed South Alabama wins it over James Madison, 75-66. And a real solid performance. Really good shooting performance in South Alabama. Despite shooting a little under 70% from the free throw line and getting out-rebounded by 8. Really solid stuff. And right now, in a game in progress, Louisiana early first half, up by 5 over a Texas State team who has been really solid as the 11th seed in the Sun Belt tournament. And again, the winner of Texas State, Louisiana, will get South Alabama for the Sun Belt Championship. What will be an intriguing game, a very intriguing game. The Louisiana's in the driver's seat. If they can beat Texas State, they're in the driver's seat. If Texas State finds a way to beat Louisiana too, I have no idea what to tell you at all. In the Colonial, there was quarterfinal action there today. Hofstra, Charleston, UNC, Wilmington, all getting the job done. And Towson is up big on Delaware. So it's looking like the top seeds will all advance to the Colonial semifinals tomorrow. Hofstra will have UNC Wilmington. It's going to be a really good game, in my opinion. Charleston looking like they're going to have Towson. And I talked a lot earlier, I think last week on this program, how I think more pressure's on Charleston. I still believe that. You know, we just kind of look at their situation from an analytical standpoint real quick. Charleston in the Colonial Athletic Association, still the better team in the conference analytically, only 3rd in KenPom, 29-3. And Towson's going to be a tough, tough opponent. Now, Towson, Charleston swept them with 2 head-to-head wins, but it's going to be a close game. Both of those games are pretty close. And Charleston does not have the resume to make it as an at-large. They do not. And so, really, I think the question so many people are asking is, if Charleston beats Towson, which, by the way, that will not even be a Q2 game. That'll still be in the third quadrant. A 30-4 Charleston team, could you really leave them out? Yes. Yes, you can. It'll be an unfortunate day, but yes, you can't leave them out. That's going to be an intriguing one. But, you know, one of the things that they actually showed on CBS today, believe it or not, was a picture, a good idea of what the committee schedule is during the week. And they'll cast their initial ballots Wednesday. They'll vote some more at-large teams in the field, seed and scrub, Thursday through Saturday. And folks, and what this graphic said, about a 25 locks, at-large locks, about 40 is put under consideration. If Charleston is not in that 40, they're done. They are done. And even though they could be in the top 60 in net, top really 55, even though they can be a 30-4 team, they may not make it. So it's a must-win situation for Charleston in that particular situation. It's kind of the way it works, unfortunately, with some of these things. But, you know, it's one of those things to where that's just the way it is, unfortunately. I wish more mid-minutes got the opportunity, but unfortunately, it's just not the way it works. Let's see here. What other major action we got? We got a lot of first round, second rounds, all those sorts of deals. Kind of looking for anything else I missed. Don't think I missed anything too crazy. So still a lot of stuff going on. Tomorrow we'll talk a little bit more about it in just a bit. But first, we're gonna get to some more new brackets in the power conferences. The Big Ten's got a little bit still to go. I think it'll be released by the time the show ends, actually. We just kind of look at the update in the Big Ten right now. Still a couple games going on. They are all late into the second half. Northwestern up on the road against Rutgers. And then Wisconsin, in a must-win game at Minnesota, is in a dogfight. That's going to be interesting there. If Wisconsin can't pull that off, I'm sorry. You cannot consider them an at-large team. You can't. The other brackets, meanwhile, in the Pac-12, this one's going to be interesting. I will be there. By the way, we may have a big announcement that's coming this week to our Twitter at College Basketball. Stay tuned for that. We may have a big one. Wednesday is when this all starts with the 8-9 game, Washington and Colorado. And then it's Wazoo and Cal, the 5-12 game. Utah and Stanford, the 7-10 game. Arizona State and Oregon State, the 6-11 matchup. UCLA the 1, Oregon the 4, Arizona the 2, USC the 3, earning the byes. This is going to be an intriguing tournament. Just to see, from USC standpoint, they are probably in. From ASU standpoint, they might need to win 3. And I'm going to go back to that selection committee graphic that I talked about earlier on, folks. That is how A&M got screwed. They were probably likely already scrubbed by the time they made their run. Arizona State might be in that same boat. They could be. They may have to win the Pac-12 tournament. They might just have to. If the committee scrubs them out, let's say Friday afternoon, let's say they beat Oregon State and USC. They would get their 5th Quadrant 1 win, if I'm not mistaken. We'll talk more about the situation in a little bit, but I'm just going to speak in the hypotheticals here. It'd be their fifth. They would have to play a Q4 game before that, though. And if the Arizona State fans listening know what I mean by a play-down game, you should be scared. I'm scared of the play-down game. Unlike any other institution in this country, that I'd be scared about the play-down game for. But that's a different point. I'll talk about that later. If ASU, in the hypothetical, using the selection committee schedule, beats Oregon State, beats USC, gets a third crack at Arizona, and the committee's already kind of scrubbed them, what are they going to do? What are they going to do other than win the tournament? They might have to win the tournament. They might have to. And they've kind of made that bet for themselves. What if you don't lose on the road to Texas Southern? You know, that's the biggest what if right now, I think, on the entire bubble. What if you don't lose to Texas Southern? I will go off more later on. I wanted to talk about the bracket in particular right now. Kind of sidetracked there a little bit. But I still think UCLA's in the best position here. You avoid Arizona and USC until the final. You would potentially get Oregon on Friday, which their interior will give UCLA problems. But I don't think Oregon is as good as UCLA, period. I think UCLA is that's a clear shot to the Pac-12 tournament title. We'll have to see what ends up happening there, but certainly an opportunity exists. Let's go to the ACC next. You want to talk about choke jobs this past week. Pittsburgh blew it. They were in position for a regular season championship for a 1. They lose twice, and they're down to a 5, losing the double by altogether. Instead, it is Duke. who gets it as the 4 seed, Clemson as the 3, Virginia as the 2, Miami goes in as the 1. That's a choke job from Pitt. That's a choke job. And they're starting to climb their way down the bubble a little bit. If they lose to Florida State or Georgia Tech in the second round, that's a conversation. That's a conversation we're going to have about Pitt. And an interesting one, I should add. An interesting one. This is an interesting bracket to me. I think Virginia is the most set up to win the ACC tournament championship. I would not be surprised if Duke did it either. I would not be surprised if Miami did it either. Either way, I think Clemson's out well before the championship. They may be out in the quarters. I don't believe in that Clemson team as much as I did a few weeks ago. They've kind of played themselves to a point where they're not as good. They're not that great at this point. They've kind of played themselves. They're still in a legitimate bubble scenario. You know, it's not necessarily implausible, but they're going to have to do a heck of a lot, this Clemson team. I mean, lost to Louisville and Boston College on the road did not help them at all. And so, having taken advantage of a... Yes, they won at NC State. I would consider that a big opportunity, but that's the only one they've really gotten, really, since mid-January. So, that again, Clemson's in an interesting spot. They are in a must-win spot at least once, if not twice, in my opinion. Should it be Virginia? If it's North Carolina, God knows what happens there. But North Carolina's also in an interesting position within that bracket. Out in the Big East, first off, for Xavier, Zach Fremantle gone the rest of the year. He's going to get some surgery. That's interesting. If it's Seton Hall that meets him in the quarterfinals, I'm not saying that Seton Hall would win that, but it becomes interesting. Creighton, the 3, potentially having to face Villanova in the quarters. With how good Villanova's played as of late, oh boy, that's going to be some interesting television because of the way Villanova's played. I mean, you look at what they've done in February since the 18th, their loss at Providence after they had beaten 3 teams at home that were not that great. Down goes Xavier in the road. Down goes Creighton at home. They get Seton Hall again and beat them. Yeah, you lost at home against UConn. Yes, Fernando's going to have to win the tournament to get a bid. But, I mean, they have an opportunity to establish momentum against Georgetown. Opportunity to face Creighton in the late window. You never know. You never, ever know. And quite frankly, in the Big East, I kind of look at UConn right now. They're the 4 seed. Analytically, they are really good. Like, really good. Do not be surprised if UConn comes out at the Big East Tournament Champions. Don't be shocked. UConn has the goods to do it against Marquette. They have the goods to do it against either Xavier or Creighton. UConn is that good. It just took them a while to show it after they had a stretch where they lost 6 of 8. And they've been showing it again. So, big opportunity, I think, for really all the top 4 seeds in the Big East. I think any one of them could come out as Big East champions. I don't think Xavier's in as good of a spot as it was, but it's an opportunity for sure. It's an opportunity. Out in the SEC, this bracket's interesting. Tennessee, the 5. They do not get a double bye. Instead, it goes to Missouri. Big, big season for Missouri. Earning the double bye in the SEC tournament. Texas A&M, the 2. Kentucky, is a 3. And I think Kentucky is the most well-positioned to win this thing. I think they are. You have potentially a Vanderbilt team, which, while you lost at home to Vanderbilt, it's unlikely that Vanderbilt does it again 9 days after that. After that game. I don't think it's as possible. I mean, Kentucky's going to have to really blow it to lose to a Vanderbilt team twice in 9 days, in my opinion. In my opinion. And then from there, I mean, Tennessee, I think, is still a very interesting team. I mean, I think they can go to the final. I think they can. They are on some really bad form right now. They are going to go in having lost, what are we talking about here, 6 of the last 10? I think that's right. Yeah, 6 of the last 10. But as we've seen with some of these teams in March already, Tennessee turns it on. They turn their defense up to another level. Watch out. With that, Ziggler will be an interesting thing to see what happens. But certainly, I think it could be a spot where it could very much happen. And something interesting has happened in the Big Sky. I have not seen this yet. Northern Arizona against Eastern Washington. Gonna have to turn this up here from the Big Sky Conference.
Here come the Lumberjacks. No timeouts. Jalen Cohn wrapped up for the win.
Wow. Northern Arizona. How about that? They take out Eastern Washington in the Big Sky. Wow. Seriously, wow. That's stunning. That is stunning. So, again, some of the first round and second round action, it's still producing the goods. And this is so surprising in the Big Sky that Eastern Washington, for the longest of times, was unbeaten. They lost 2 in a row going into the conference tournament. They go down to Northern Arizona. Eastern Washington's going to the NIT. Their defense is not that great. I don't think they have much of a shot. But wow, that's a huge stunner. Big props to Northern Arizona. And before I get back on track, opens the door for Montana State. Opens the door for Montana State to go out and win the Big Sky. Wow. What a shocker out in Boise. Back to the SEC. Like I was saying, I think Tennessee has a shot to get to the final potentially. We're going to really find out what Alabama's made of in a neutral court. And this is a big point for me. With everything that's transpired with the Brandon Miller saga, everything that's happened, the loss to Texas A&M, by the way, this weekend, we're going to find out what Alabama is made of on a neutral court. And that might be some of the most valuable information you can get right now in March on Alabama. With as wide open as it is, it could end up being very valuable as to how I felt my bracket. So, big opportunity coming up there for them. And then the Big 12, I think, is all we have left. This is going to be, oh my God, this would be so much fun. West Virginia, Texas Tech, game 1. Oklahoma State, Oklahoma, game 2 on Wednesday. That's the opening round. Baylor, Iowa State is confirmed in the quarters. Kansas State, TC is confirmed in the quarters. West Virginia, should they beat Texas Tech, could play Kansas. And Oklahoma State, they picked a must-win game. They could face Texas. Very interesting tournament there. You're going to see so many great games in Kansas City. You will. And it's to the point to where this tournament being in Kansas City means something. And by that, I mean Kansas will win this tournament, in my opinion. Having the Kansas City environment with you in such a major, major tournament with 10 good teams, that means so much. And I think Kansas will get the job done within 3 close, hard-fought contests. I think Kansas finds a way to get the job done. Checking in on the Big Ten. I know I mentioned that bracket would come out a little bit later. Still not quite done with some of the action here yet. Wisconsin up by a pair of Minnesota late. Northwestern is really giving it to Rutgers. Rutgers! They will fall to 18-13. They are not putting themselves in a great spot. When we look at the bracket matrix and how it's built right now, I think I have to open it back up again. I mean, Rutgers has not had a good week. They haven't. You know, just to paint the picture for you here, Rutgers going in and an update today was the final 10 seed. You're seeing many 11s pop up for Rutgers. And it's starting to get very dangerous for them. Would have to go in to see what Joe Lenardi thought. He is one of the more open of the major bracketologists. Hasn't updated big time on his Twitter. I'd have to go to his to the main ESPN page here. But the point here is that Rutgers is not that safe. They're not. It's something that they're going to have to really take that Big Ten tournament very seriously. Because if they don't, they're in big trouble. They're in big trouble. You know, going in, and the latest update was right before the show went on the air around... Yeah, right as the show went on the air tonight, Rutgers was in the last four byes. So they are... They're hanging on to dear life. They need to win some Big Ten tournament games if they want to be considered safely in the tournament. When we get that bracket, I'm hoping it's before the show is up here live. I will present that to you. But for right now, let's discuss some bubble teams and what they need to do. I'm going to start with Arizona State. The two losses of the LA schools this week killed them. Now, once again... Another scenario where no one expected to win Arizona. Everyone into the final stretch thinking, okay, let's get at least one. Two would be great, but at least one's like the bare minimum. They got that win. It's one of the best wins anywhere in the bubble. But now you're in a position where Michigan's not helping you. You're 4-5 in that first quadrant, 5-5 in the second. The Q4 loss to Texas Southern, one of the biggest what-ifs in the bubble. What if they didn't lose that game at Texas Southern? What if the Pac-12 didn't schedule the Legacy Series? Period. Because that is almost going to directly cost the conference a bid. Great off the court initiative, but holy moly. You wonder why no one does that kind of initiative in the powered conferences. Hello? You're seeing it now. You're seeing why. But again... The team's got to get the job done. ASU didn't. And so now they're in a position to where that loss happened. VCU wasn't as great as perhaps some had advertised. Or maybe as good. But the A-10 as a whole just wasn't all that great. Michigan wasn't as great as advertised. That Colorado game is still hanging on to Q1 for dear life. And you're in a position to where you get to play Oregon State on Wednesday night. In the After Dark slot with good old Bill Walton on the call. Yes, I locate some hate for this, my friends, but boo! In the After Dark time slot, ASU is in major trouble. As I mentioned earlier, this is the playdown game. Oregon State, by the way, has had halftime leads, I believe twice. In any instance, ASU has had to come back in the second half twice against Oregon State. Twice. And I believe if there is an upset available in the first round, first off, I think Colorado will beat Washington. I know I'm taking the random number generator of the Pac-12 and quite frankly of a sport, but I trust Colorado more than Washington, which is actually kind of hard to believe. But Oregon State has shown it can play well against Arizona State. And Arizona State has showed that when everyone and their mom wants them to stop shooting the basketball, they keep shooting the basketball. Folks, that's a really bad thing to do when you're not a good three-point shooting team and when it's March. Because do you know how easily teams can get caught out in an upset? Ask Eastern Washington. Ask Southern Miss. Ask Marshall. Heck, ask James Madison. Ask Longwood. So many other examples. Ask Morehead State. There are so many examples of this. And a bad shooting night, coupled with a competent, good knife Morgan State, spells trouble. And I'm going to tell you this right now. And this is a prediction. This is a hard-line prediction. If ASU loses to Oregon State... They will not be mentioned once on the selection show. They will go down all the way to a 3 in the NIT. Yes, 4 teams will jump them. Yes, 4 teams will jump them, in my opinion. Because you cannot take a second quad 4 loss when you're at a conference with the schedule and the net's not that great. Overall, still good. Overall, still good. When the analytics don't hate you, and I mean hate you, they've hated you for the better course of the season, really ever since you took the loss to USC to begin with the first time around. ASU has to win that game against Oregon State. They must win against USC. And that game on Saturday, ASU had every opportunity to win that game. And what'd they do? Brick, 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 brick. Come on! Come on! Really? That was horrendous basketball. Horrendous. And in March, you have to survive those games. And ASU kept shooting itself in the foot time after time after time. It's kind of the theme of the season. It's kind of classic Arizona sports, if we're just being honest with ourselves here. But I do not expect ASU to make it to Friday. I expect ASU will beat Oregon State by anywhere from 1 to 6 points. I don't think that's going to be a dominating victory that they need it to be. They'll lose to USC. They will have their name mentioned as the first four out. They will play an 8-seed in the NIT. And quite frankly, it could be disastrous. That's my prediction. That's a hard-line prediction. Again. But for them to make the tournament, I think they absolutely have to make the Pac-12 tournament final. Because again, you don't know when the committee is going to scrub you. And I think every bubble team in America should have paid attention to that selection committee graphic. Every single bubble team should have that plastered on the locker room. And they should ask themselves, what can we do before Friday night? What can we do before Saturday to prove to the committee that we belong? Because there are teams in this bubble that I think can get A&M'd to where they make a run and still not make it. Arizona State is one of those teams that I think could get A&M'd. I do. The only thing that will secure them safety is a Pac-12 tournament championship. Because even making the final, even picking up 2 Quad 1 wins, getting the 6, assuming the Michigan game does not go to Q1, even that would be interesting, in my opinion. In my opinion. They could easily make it into the tournament. Easily. If they lose the Pac-12 tournament final to UCLA in a close one. Easily. It just depends on what happens before them. And how far the committee has gone within the scrubbing process already. We'll have to see. Meanwhile, for Wisconsin. Oh, Wisconsin. I hate this team. They shouldn't be a tournament team. But their strength of schedule says they are with the kind of wins they have. And I freaking hate it. Oh, I'm not a fan of it. I'm just not. We look at, again, at what's going to be going on in the Big Ten. Another update live here on BlazeRadioOnline.com. Just to check in on what Wisconsin has done. Just to check in. Again, that Minnesota game was a must-win. Oh, the bracket's out. Big Ten tournament bracket is out, ladies and gentlemen. Some live analysis coming to you right now. Some instant analysis. Wisconsin's the 12th. They will play Ohio State. Oh, I hate the Big Ten Conference. I'm going to tell you why in a minute. Why this is one of the best case scenarios for Wisconsin. Yes, of the 12th. They beat Minnesota. It was a close game. The analytics should hate them for it. Even more than they already do. But folks. Ohio State is 63rd in the net. It's still a quad 2 game. It is still a quad 2 game. Nebraska would have been a quad 2 game too. But, oh my goodness. Wisconsin has to beat Ohio State. There's no going around that. The next one will be Iowa. And they need to win that too, in my opinion. They won twice against Iowa. If Wisconsin can have a 3-game sweep against Iowa, with 2 games being in that first quadrant, a 7th quad 1 win, despite the low net, the committee may have no choice. And I will hate it. Because the Big Ten is the battle of mid, and almost everyone except Purdue, and maybe IU will be gone by the second weekend. Big Ten basketball. Tale as old as I am, really. Really sad. But, again, this guy has a shot. Ohio State and Iowa. Gotta win those 2 games. From there, it would be Michigan State. We'll see what happens. We'll see what happens with Wisconsin. But they can pick up those two wins. Even if they lose to Michigan State, they will have given themselves the seventh quad one win, and they will have given themselves a winning record in the second quadrant. And they will have given themselves a shot, in my opinion. They will have given themselves a shot, but they have to win two games in the Big Ten tournament. If they can do that, they can get in, because the Big Ten's been overrated this whole year. Why would it change now? To North Carolina we go in the ACC. They blew a golden opportunity at home against Duke in a five-point loss. So, now, 1-9 in that first quadrant. No losses in the bottom two quadrants. They're 6-3 in the second quadrant. Well, we refer back to our good old friend, the Bracket Matrix. North Carolina is still out by a decent ways. But because there's been so many bubble teams that haven't quite gotten the mentions, they're still kind of there, getting included in some first four out type situations. This thing actually, I think it updated not too long ago to put ASU as the first team out on seeding inclusion, which is an interesting note. Utah State and Arizona State are on the same number of brackets included. We'll talk about Utah State in a bit. But from North Carolina, let's get back here. This team might be auto bid or bust, in my opinion. They have done nothing they have done hardly anything. The only column win is against Virginia at home. And ladies and gentlemen, Virginia's 30th in net. If Virginia falls out of the top 30 in net, it's a quad two game. Quad two. So North Carolina could still not have a quad one win. They have to pick up multiple quad ones, in my opinion. So, what does that mean? What does that mean for North Carolina? You got to win against Florida State or Georgia Tech. You have to do that. You have no choice there. Or, I'm sorry, Boston College or Louisville. You really got to win against Boston College or Louisville. You must win again against Virginia. Leave no doubts. Because on a neutral floor, that is a quad one win, and that will be guaranteed. You gotta win against Clemson. You have to win against Clemson. That could be a Q2 game. Or if it's against a Virginia Tech or a NC State, you gotta win that game. Especially if it's NC State. If it's NC State, that's a possible quality opportunity. You go all the way through there, get to the final, possibly Miami, possibly Duke, quality opportunity. Does North Carolina need to win there too? I don't know. They could have to. They could. But if they get to the ACC tournament final, play it close, lose it, you have to put North Carolina in the conversation. You have to put them in the conversation as that last team in, first team out kind of scenario. You have to get them in the conversation. I'm not willing to say they're auto bid or bust quite yet because they still have some opportunities. But they're not quite there. And they very well may need the auto bid. Nevada. Oh, Nevada. They have put themselves in a bind. Nevada is included in 65 of the 68 brackets. They are the fourth team in the field at this point. Yeah, the fourth team in the field at this point, Nevada. They have screwed themselves royally. They have two Q3 losses on the resume in the last two games, all within a six-day span, I should say. So you have a Q2 opportunity against San Jose State that could fall into Q3 if you beat them badly enough. That's a must-win game. You could possibly play San Diego State in the semifinal. Does the win against San Jose State guarantee their safety? I'm not willing to say that. But if they play close against San Diego State, and that's a really close game, and if that doesn't hurt them much analytically, yes, they're in. I think they're in at that point. They've kind of earned it. They've kind of earned that safety, in my opinion, but still got some work to do. Utah State. Oh, Utah State. They're 21st in the net. First off, congratulations, Utah State. You have a quad one win. Finally. After all the other wins you got, we're bumped out of that first quadrant because of the nature of the Mountain West. You finally have that quad one win, as long as Boise State doesn't blow it. So they're sitting in 21st in that tonight. They are sitting 21st in net. This is a situation where Utah State could face Boise State in the semifinal if they get past possibly New Mexico in the quarters. If they beat Boise State bad enough, first off, yes, they will have another quad one win. But you could put the other one back in the second quadrant. So you might still only have one. Go down to a possible final against San Diego State. This team is like, they have two Q4 losses. They've only played five quad one games. They're 8-1 in the second quadrant, which is good. They played 12 Q3 games. Won them all. Fantastic. Oh my gosh. For me, for a team like Utah State, if they're in the top 25 in net and they don't make it in, I will actually be furious. I will actually be very furious. But we'll see where that one goes. And then Penn State finally will wrap it up. They're starting to make their way into some bracketologies. Big win for them at Northwestern Wednesday. And then over the course of today, they picked up that win against Maryland I talked about. So Penn State is starting to move the needle. They are moving the needle. They're making their way into major bracketologies. And now in the Big Ten tournament, they are facing a situation where an opportunity exists for them to lock themselves in. They will play Illinois on Thursday before a potential matchup against Northwestern. By the way, Northwestern is a two congrats. Real quickly, my final thought here before I have to go. For a team like Penn State, if they can win two, they're safe. If they can win one and play close against Northwestern, they're in that conversation. They could be on the wrong end of it, but at least they're in the conversation. And in the Big Ten Conference, that's seemingly all you have to be is in the conversation before you have a shot. You have a legitimate shot. That's going to wrap things up for the Bonanza tonight. The nightly recaps will continue on our podcast platform, so make sure to search the College Basketball Bonanza on there. Bracket breakdowns will continue through this coming week on all the powered conferences and more. And again, that nightly show, it could be on location somewhere special. So again, follow us on Twitter at College Breakdowns to make sure you do not miss a single piece of our content and get updated on the sport over the next week before we're back in here on Selection Sunday to break down the Field of 68. I've been Nicholas Hodel with a very good week. It's that week of conference tournaments we all love. For our live listeners here on BlazeRadioOnline.com, here's one shiny moment. Have a very good week, everyone.